This week on the Mountain Climbers Podcast, Grant Harris, chaplain of the New Zealand Breakers and senior pastor of Windsor Park Baptist Church.
On one evening, the presenter told us that we shouldn't associate with losers.
There is something here for everyone, especially those who don't believe in God.
What does the church have to say about money? Why do you need God? Why do you think it's important that it's a pastor doing that and not a life coach? How does someone learn to develop that level of control?
I'm Duncan Tolmie, and the Mountain Climbers Podcast begins next.
Thanks, Windsor Creative, for helping make the Mountain Climbers Podcast possible. Visit www.windsorcreative.org.nz to discover more about Windsor Creative. That's www.windsorcreative.org.nz.
Hello there, everybody, and welcome to the Mountain Climbers Podcast. I'm Duncan Tolmie, and today I am really excited to be joined by Grant Harris, the chaplain for the New Zealand Breakers and also senior pastor of Windsor Park Baptist Church. Great to be with you today, Grant.
Thank you, Duncan. Thanks for inviting me along.
Look, I'd like to start right back at the beginning, looking at your childhood. What do you think is the most important or interesting lesson that your parents taught to you?
Duncan, I come from a fairly conservative background, and so I would say that it's not so much what my parents said to me, it's what they modeled to me. My parents modeled to me a real solid base and the importance of being able to have a great home life, one that I was free to explore my own questions and develop who I am as a person. And so my parents really encouraged that just in their love and acceptance of everything that I did. So for me, it was really about their modeling. That was the most significant thing as I grew up.
Okay. And what did you go into?
What was the job? The first job that I applied for was as a menswear salesman in a department store in Palmerston North. And I thought, well, that's an all right job. Went to the interview. The guy that was interviewing me ended up saying, I think you're too qualified for this. So the next job that came up maybe the following week was a job in the bank, Eastern and Central Trustee Bank, as it was. And so bottom level, teller type position. So my dad was kind of okay with that because that was in a bank. So I took up that job just a month after turning 16.
Wow. And you worked your way up for a little bit through that bank, didn't you?
Yeah. So Eastern and Central Trustee Bank was back in the days of regional banks in New Zealand. Ultimately, that developed into Trust Bank and then ultimately got bought out by Westpac. So I had a 12-year career starting at the bottom. My first week was putting statements in envelopes and posting them out. And then my last few years were based in head office in Wellington for Westpac's and in their credit division. So I guess my career went well. I got promoted well as a young guy and saw that as potentially my career, but didn't last.
I find it very interesting that you had quit banking to become a Baptist minister, to become a pastor. Why did you decide to make that change?
I think over my life, I have always been a people's person. I've always enjoyed people. The bank probably didn't do me any favors. I developed my career well and had lots of opportunities to grow in some of the courses. One course that I went to was a Dale Carnegie course, How to Win Friends and Influence People. On one evening, the presenter told us that we shouldn't associate with losers. That wouldn't be great for our careers, it wouldn't be great for our business. And for me, there was a sense of, that kind of went against some of the stuff that I've been taught as a Christian. So that kind of started a process for me, thinking, is that what I want to do? And certainly as I progressed through my career, absolutely, we had to schmooze up to wealthy people. And our job was to increase people's wealth. And so I started to struggle a little bit with what my motivations were for doing a corporate career. And so then I went through a whole process, both my wife and I, a process of, I guess, soul searching and thinking, so what is it that we want to do? It was never our thought to be a minister. It had never crossed my path until one Sunday morning. We'd just got the internet. I'm old enough to remember those days. You probably don't.
No, unfortunately.
That's right. I was looking online and the homepage of Carey Baptist College, the Theological College of the Baptist Churches, came up. And I thought, maybe I should go there and train to be a local church pastor. And so that began a process for us of thinking through that and ultimately led to the career change.
What do you say to people who think that we don't have a purpose at all and that there is no purpose for our lives and we're all just here by miraculous whatever happening?
Well, there are plenty of people that say that we might not have an ultimate purpose, but I think in everyone's heart, everyone wants the best for them. They want the best for their families. They want the best for the situation that they're involved with. And underlying all that is, well, there's purpose behind that. There's something more significant.
And I think everyone has a desire to have some sort of legacy, that when they leave this planet, that they'll be remembered in some kind of way, and that can only really be found in purpose.
Yeah, I think the vast majority of people feel that.
Yeah.
Not everybody, for sure, but I would, if I was to put a percentage on that, I would say 95% of people understand that there's a bigger picture somewhere, somehow, and we're playing a part in that. I often talk to my kids about the fact that we're only here for a chapter of time. You know, our lives are here today, gone tomorrow, in the scheme of forever.
Whether you believe in God or not, that's just the way it is, eh?
Well, it seems to have been the case. You know, people have been born and they die since people have been people.
I was talking to your son, Ben, who I admire very much. He's been one of my leaders. And he was telling me when I asked him, what is something I should ask Grant? Mm-hmm. And I definitely agree with him on this. He said, you're very calm, very collective. He has hardly ever seen you be angry at all. How does someone learn to develop that level of control?
Oh, I always think the sun's going to come up tomorrow. No matter what happens in this situation, the world will carry on, and the world doesn't depend upon me. So I will do the best that I can in whatever situation that I'm involved with. I'll seek to, you know, act and care and do all the things that I need to do as a leader. But, you know, I don't get my own sense of well-being out of the title that I have in my job. I have to be comfortable with myself so that everything kind of disappears tomorrow. I've got to be okay with who I am as a person.
So that realization that everything is finite.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. It doesn't all depend upon me.
What would a day in the life of Grant Harris look like?
It would look very different. Every day is different. Predominantly, my role is around leading, casting vision, making sure that my leadership team is well cared for and can do their things. And I guess having the heart of our wider organization as our key driver, making sure that we're united in what our purpose is as a local church.
You speak to thousands of people every Sunday and throughout the week. Do you have a ritual?
I guess I have a ritual around my time and my preparation. So on a Sunday for me, I'm normally at my office at around 5 a.m. and it gives me a couple of hours before.
That's not usual during the week, though. That's just Sunday.
That's on a Sunday.
Okay. That's very early.
But on a Sunday, it actually gives me a couple of hours to look at what I'm going to say, to kind of revisit it, to think, is it still what I want to say after my preparation? And it gives me a couple of hours just to get my own thoughts in my head before other people arrive.
You mentioned before that you are the chaplain of the New Zealand Breakers. What does a chaplain actually do? Is it basically a counsellor?
I talk about it this way. The coaches deal with all of their basketball. I deal with their lives. And it comes from the relationship and the understanding that if something is going on in our life off court, when we think about a basketball example, it's often going to affect our performance on court. If there is something significant going on for us personally, then our bodies are connected, body, mind, and spirit. So if we are upset about something happening at home or whatever the case might be, it will affect their performance on court. So
even in business.
Absolutely.
Yeah, anywhere.
Sure, anywhere. Yeah. In the basketball example. So I guess the Breakers have a culture and understanding that we are holistic. And so my role really is to say, look, if there's something going on for you off court, I'm there for you. I'm there to talk with you, to direct you, to refer you to professional help if that's what's needed, kind of anything that's happening in your life off court.
Wow, that's really interesting. I think a lot of people, including myself, do forget that when you see them out there on the court and you see them on TV, even if you see a television personality or anyone that's really famous, you do tend to forget that they are still people.
Well, you know, for professional sports people, and here in New Zealand, obviously we have high expectations on our professional sports people, whether All Blacks through to basketballers, whatever sport you want to talk about, we have high expectations on them. And the more you know them, the more they struggle with those expectations. They don't go into it to be role models and to be seen to have all their lives together, and yet there's still that expectation on them. So there's expectation around performance. There's expectation around being great in public. There's expectation around signing shirts and doing all of that sort of stuff. And so the expectations on our professional sports people are high, and a lot of them struggle with that expectation. They just want to play the sport that they love. That's what they're in it for. And so there's not a lot of equipping for that, and there's not a lot of equipping for them to be able to think about their lives holistically. So I guess chaplaincy fills a little bit of a void for them.
Why do you think it's important that it's a pastor doing that and not a life coach?
Well, I
chaplaincy in of very self, I guess, is a Christian discipline. Mm. And so we understand the spiritual side of life, which is real for all of us, whether we choose to acknowledge that or not. So I guess I do it as a pastor. Not all chaplains are pastor, but chaplaincy in itself in New Zealand is inherently Christian based. So a life coach doesn't always come from that view of saying it's about spirituality as well, where we take the holistic view with that.
And what do you do? What do you mean when you say spirituality? How would you talk to players about spirituality?
Well, I actually think in New Zealand, as much as some might say that we're a secular nation, it was my experience certainly that most people understand that spirituality is about our soul, that there is a bigger picture at play, that there is a purpose to us, that we are involved in something bigger than ourselves. And so that sense of spirituality, I guess the wider our spirit, what's going on in the depths of our hearts, what are we thinking about? I think most people understand that that is, broadly speaking, spirituality.
What do you think the being the chaplain of the New Zealand Breakers has taught you?
It's continued to shape me as a person. My career, the things that I do, are very task-focused. I like to achieve things, but chaplaincy, one of the lines we use is lingering with intent. So it's not about what we do, it's not about what we achieve, it's about who we are as people. The players, the people in the club, will only speak to me if they trust me. They'll only speak to me if they think that I'm okay. So it's not about anything that I do, it's about who I am and would they want to speak to me. So it's continued to refine my character around the importance of people, around at the end of the day, it's not about the things that we achieve, it's about, you know, who we are.
Moving on to Christianity now, just a few questions about that. What do you say to people who think that they don't need God?
Well, if someone believes that they don't need God, then I'm not really going to change their mind particularly. I might change the mind of somebody that is open to thinking about why they need God, but I think at the end of the day, for me, it comes down to the fact that we are spiritual people, that there is a bigger purpose. If we choose to think about it, and that's a choice that we all make, the world is far too big and far too complex for us to think that this happened by accident.
Why do you need God?
I need God because it gives me my complete sense of identity. I don't need to find my identity in the title of my job or in the house or the car.
What do you mean by identity? Who you are?
I just know that I'm part of God's design, that I'm part of his plan. Mm. I believe that he's wired me together specifically. There's no one like me. You know, it's the old story. We look at our fingerprints. No one has fingerprints the same as us. We are unique. And you can look at all those different dynamics. And so for me, understanding that I'm kind of put together by God who designed our whole universe, it gives me a place of belonging. And so that's hugely significant. That's what so many people struggle with these days. Who am I and what am I here for? Mm. For me, it's answered in the story of God and the story of the way he dealt with his people as revealed through the Bible.
What does the church have to say about money?
The church itself says lots of different things about money. According to which church you are talking to. I think it's about our interpretation of what we see in the Bible. So I guess,
and actually that's a really good point that you made, because a lot of people will look at one particular church, and I'm thinking of one pastor who is in the media quite a bit, and they think, oh, everyone's like that.
Yeah.
But that is not the case
that
at
is
all, is
definitely
it?
Definitely not the case. In fact, that's the exception. I mean,
yeah.
In today's media-saturated environment, those churches that say some out there things or behave in certain ways, they seem to get the media. But that's probably only about 1 or 2% of the churches, and there's a whole bunch of others that do things very differently. Mm-hmm. So for money, for me, look, money itself is not inherently good or evil. Money is a mode of being able to enable the economy to work. The Bible says lots of things about money. In fact, Jesus says more things about money than almost any other topic. So it was very important to him. But a premise that would underline everything for me is that money is something that we steward. It's a responsibility that we have. To those who are wealthy, the Bible clearly says, to whom much is given, much is expected. So how are we stewarding that?
There's a particular verse in the Bible, and I'm annoyed that I didn't get it beforehand, but it says that it's more difficult to get a rich person into heaven than a needle through the pupil of a camel's eye or something like that.
Yeah.
If you are a very rich person, does that mean that you're not going to be able to? Because a lot of rich people are great and Christian as well.
So really, I believe that that's saying that the responsibility is significant, that money has the potential. As it says in the Bible, it says money is the root of all evil. And it's not, people think that that's what it says, but there's a little part in there that people don't often read out. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. So if we place money as one of our gods, as we place it as one of our key drivers in life, that we feel that we get our success or our significance out of how much money that we have, then we'll always be chasing that. And the Bible says the exact opposite. In fact, Paul says in one of the most significant passages for me, I've had to work at this, in Philippians 4:11, he talks about contentment. And he says, I know what it is to have plenty, because he was in business, he knew that. And I know what it is to have nothing, because he's lost everything. He said, it doesn't matter whether I have lots or nothing. I've learned to be content. And it's that passage, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So what he's saying is, I can be content whether I have lots, and I can be content whether I have little. Jesus helps me with that. And so there is a sense for those who are wealthy, again, it comes down to, it doesn't really matter how much you've got, it comes down to your attitude towards that. So what am I doing with that? And is it really mine? How much do I hold on to it? How generous am I going to be? A lot of people say, you know, we have to give away 10% of our income. Again, I don't believe that the Bible says that in a New Testament way. Jesus says he loves generosity. So for people with lots of money, I mean, 10%, well, I would say maybe it's a guide, but for people with wealthy, well, that should be the minimum. Robert Laidlaw, who started Farmers, one of the most successful early businessmen in New Zealand, he wrote down on a bit of paper, if I make this much, I'll give this much away. And he ended up giving away 90% of his income. Now, he did well out of the remaining 10%, but his heart was, I just want to be generous. I want to support things. Laidlaw College, founded by his donations, lots of different things. So our attitude is important, but at the end of the day, our actions speak louder than our words.
Moving on to some more general life questions now, Grant. Most mornings, what is the first thing that you think of when you wake up?
What emails have come in overnight?
Really? It's work. That's the first thing.
Yeah, look, I'm an early riser, so I do like to get up and spend a little bit of time just with myself again before the family wakes up, just thinking, okay, what's on my agenda today, getting my thoughts in line. So for me, I do wake up and pretty quickly get my head into what's coming up for the day, just because, again, that's my rhythm. I normally have always got up early. I've always gone to the office early. So for me, I wake up in the morning thinking, yeah, what's ahead? What do I need to think about? What do I need to prepare myself for? What am I working on? What are my deadlines? So my mind clicks in too quickly sometimes.
When do you think about God?
When do I think about God? I think for me, as I have grown and aged over time, I learned to accept that everything is about God. My life is about God. My work is about God. Who I am depends on how I allow God to mold and shape me. So,
but you can't think about God all the time.
No, you can't think about God all the time. There is obviously, for me, I work in the industry where I can talk about the Bible more so than others.
Yeah.
But I think outside of that, you think about God and what your hopes and dreams are for the future and why you are thinking those things. What is your motivation for achieving something that you want to achieve in life?
So in a typical day, at what time would you have thought about God?
I guess I prepare my best messages and say my best answers to questions such as that when I'm in the shower. So fairly early in the morning, I'm doing some of my best thinking. I'm just waiting for them to invent some waterproof paper. Because I certainly say my best things when I'm in the shower. So for me, pretty early in the morning.
Yeah, in the shower is when you start thinking about God and things.
Yeah, that's when I start thinking.
Who is the Christian leader or pastor that you admire the most?
The Christian leader? Internationally, I struggle to really identify one above another. But I know locally, there are some retired pastors that I know who have served faithfully in this country, often without a whole lot of fanfare. I love that they hung in there in the up and down days. And so I have two or three of them.
Do you mind sharing their names?
Yeah, well, Murray Cottle would be one that's be very effective to me. We had a couple of people, Bill McGregor, he was in our church a number of years ago before he shifted to Tauranga. People like that who have just served faithfully over the years. And, you know, it's not an easy profession. There are lots of challenges within it, lots of people challenges. And so those that have done time and have hung in there, I admire them.
We're going to finish now with a bit of a game, Grant. I'd like you to just finish the sentence. Grant Harris is still learning to...
learn.
Learning to learn.
I'm still learning to learn. I don't know it all. And I'm still learning how to adapt. I'm still learning to lead. I'm still learning about people. I'm still learning about God. I'm still learning how to be a dad now that I have young adult children. I'm still learning that the world is a different place than it was, and what does that mean for the future?
I think that's quite a lot of learning things there, Grant. Always learning. But I think you've got a lot of those things. You do them still very, very well.
A few years ago, I did a psychometric test called Strength Finders, and it identifies your top five strengths. One of mine is a learner. So I just
and
like,
yet you're still learning to be a learner.
I just like learning stuff.
Awesome. Grant Harris is most at peace when?
He's sitting on his boat at Lake Maraetai in Mangakino, thinking about the world.
Why does that bring you the most peace, Grant?
I've discovered, see, it's about rhythm. I've discovered that I like sitting on lakes. I've discovered that I love the natural beauty of that part of our country.
Very beautiful.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I just find that being outdoors on water, just thinking in a calm day, brings me peace to my soul.
All right. The guest is Grant Harris, chaplain for the New Zealand Breakers and senior pastor of Windsor Park Baptist Church. If you want to find out more about Grant, just visit www.windsorpark.org.nz. Last question for you now, Grant. Have you reached the mountaintop, the pinnacle, summit?
I'm still climbing, Duncan.
Still climbing, still a mountain climber. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Grant. It's been great spending the afternoon with you.
Wonderful. Still climbing the mountain.
Next week on the Mountain Climbers podcast, Matilda Green, social media influencer, author, television personality, and the winner of The Bachelor New Zealand.
Was there anything that happened off camera between you and Art? Has marriage changed the dynamics of your relationship at all? What do you admire most about yourself?
That's a tough one.
That's a very good point. And I haven't thought of that in that way before as well.
No questions off limits. I was shocked she was willing to share this much.
There's no one there that's kind of on your team.
Mm-hmm. When did you realise that Art was the one?
Huge, huge surprise.
Then later, Matilda and Art have a bun in the oven, a baby on the way. Is she willing to drop the name? I'm Duncan Tolmie, and the Mountain Climbers podcast continues next week. I'm Duncan Tolmie, and you've been listening to the Mountain Climbers podcast. To stay connected, like the Mountain Climbers podcast on Facebook today.